We're doing the book of Shmuel. We're up to what's called Shmuel Bet, the 15th chapter. We had left off at a very tense moment when David hears that his son Avshalom has succeeded in the rebellion, that the masses are following Avshalom, and they're headed after him. And after everything David's gone through, the people of Israel have turned on him, and we discussed how Avshalom did it, how he fooled the people, how he fooled the elders, and how he had the great advice of Achitophel, that tremendously wise advisor of David, who had it in for David ever since David took his granddaughter. And Avshalom is ready to kill David. And if you recall, this all started when David took Bathsheba. And God offered David the opportunity to seal his own fate. And unbeknownst to David, when he declared that the one who took the sheep, that was the allegory that the prophet gave him, will pay four times for what he did. So God said, that's your fate, you'll pay four times. And we'd seen time and again. First his daughter was taken by Amnon, then Amnon was murdered. First he lost that baby, I'm sorry, his wife Bathsheba didn't miscarry, the baby was born and died. And then His son Amnon took his daughter Tamar by force, and then Avshalom killed Amnon, and now Avshalom is leading a rebellion to kill David.
How do Avshalom convince the people to go with him?
That was last week, sorry. But it's online, you can pick it up. So David tells the servants, he realizes that he's at a pivotal point. If he tells the servants the wrong words, they might join the rebellion, and then he's finished. So David tells the servants that are with him, come, let's run, so that we make it, because if he catches us quickly, could be we'll all be wiped out, we'll all be killed. And David is really trying to portray it as though they're all in danger, and the servants answer him, and they say, our king, whatever our master, the king, decides, we're standing with you as your servants. They declare very clearly that they're faithful to him and their faith is unwavering. And David leaves. And we discussed how David was hit with leprosy. He had tzaras. And we discussed how Hashem left David. Now for 6 months, David was distanced by everyone. And perhaps that was part of the backdrop to the scene of Avshalom's rebellion. Here David is ill. No one can come close to him. He's ostracized. He's separated from the nation. And Avshalom, who's been setting the scene, he's been preparing the scene for his rebellion. He seizes on the moment and he leads his rebellion. And David, who is, so to speak, out of touch, David is distanced from everyone in this state, is taken. And so now David has to run. He leaves behind 10 of the women, 10 of the pilagshim, to watch over the house, and he distances himself. And he stands by the most distant house outside the wall, and the servants are all passing by him. And the crazy and placy, which the literal translation is the spear throwers and the stone throwers, and the gitim, which were Gentiles, people who came from Gat, or one understanding is they were Jews who lived in Gat. Everyone's passing, and David tells Ittai Agiti, why should you come with me? You've come from so far away from God. Why should you come? You come from a foreign land. You're not one of my servants that you should worry about the dangers of Avshalom. You're a foreigner visiting here. You don't have to leave. You just got here. Now you'll come with me. You go stay. Take your brothers with you. And I appreciate the kindness and the truth you did with me. And Ittai answers David and he says, I swear by Hashem and I swear by your life that wherever you, my master the king, goes, for death or for life, I am with you. And David says, okay, So then you go with your people. I see you don't want to leave me, so come along. Itai goes, and not only does he take his men, he takes his children as well. Now, he doesn't have much of a choice. You leave your children behind, he's not sure he can find them alive when he comes back. And they're all weeping as they leave. This is an unusual rebellion. It's the king's own son. And they cross the Kidron Valley, the stream of Kidron. Excuse me. So they're traveling out towards the desert. And Tzadok and the Levites, Tzadok the Kohen, the priest, and the Levites come with the Aaron and Evyatal. And there's an interesting thing that happens here. We have a tradition that this was a pivotal moment in Jewish history from a different perspective entirely. And that is that until this day, Evyatal was the Kohen Gadol. He was the high priest, Evyatal. He was a descendant of Eli, the Kohen Gadol. And if you recall, Eli had received a prophecy. God was upset at him, and God said that he would remove the Kohuna Gadola from his family. And we have a tradition that when the Pasuk describes that Tzadok and Evyatal were there, the Pasuk is really indicating that on that day, David attempted asking Hashem questions through Evyatal, and Hashem wouldn't answer him. And this was an indication to them that Evyatal was not worthy of being Kohen Gadol, which is a phenomenal concept. Here Hashem has left David. Here Hashem has given David leprosy. Here Hashem has set up his own son against him, and there's a massive rebellion. And David has to wonder, is he going to live or die? As we're going to see in a minute, David tells Tzadok, if I find favor in the eyes of Hashem, he'll bring me back and I'll see his resting place. And if not, so then Hashem will do what's fit in his eyes. David wasn't sure where he was standing in the eyes of Hashem. But when David asks Evyatar, and Evyatar has been the trusted Kohen Gadol for years now, and he does not receive an answer from Hashem, they understand that is an indication that Evyatar is not worthy. And that day Tzadok becomes Kohen Gadol. And the whole Kohuna Gdola has shifted families from Evyatar to Tzadok. And Tzadok and Evyatar, although Evyatar is the past Kohen Gadol, Tzadok is the newly appointed Kohen Gadol, they come out to join David in his exile. And David says, no, you bring back the Aaron. The Aaron doesn't go into exile with me. If I find favor in the eyes of Hashem, he'll bring me back. And if Hashem doesn't want me, so then he'll do what's fit in his eyes. But the Aaron doesn't travel with me. And then David says to Tzadok, he says, look here, I have advice, and tell me if you think it's right. If you go back to the city in peace, and you have your son, Achimatz, and you have the son of the previous Kohen Gadol, Yonatan ben Evyatal, your two sons are with you, you two Kohanim. And I'm going to pause a little bit outside in the desert, and I want to get word from you to give me advice. You, Tzadok and Evyatal, bring the Aaron back to Jerusalem and they wait. Everyone knows that Avshalom is headed to Jerusalem. Remember, David initiated that the capital of Israel is in Jerusalem. And Avshalom's next step is to capture the capital. So David is waiting out in the desert. He's waiting to hear word where what he should do. Tzadok and Evyatal go back to Jerusalem. David is leaving, and the verse describes how his head was uncovered. He's walking barefoot because he was ostracized. Halachically, the rabbis banished him. And he was in mourning. And he was weeping. Doesn't get worse than the state he's in now. After everything he's been through, after everything he's done, his own son turned against him, and the people of Israel turned against him, and he has leprosy, and God has left him. But David doesn't give up. And that is the hallmark of David. In the face of every form of adversity, he holds on to his relationship with Hashem. It's not easy, Chazal say, that David contemplated leaving Judaism at this point. Chazal say that here, towards the end of David's life, he sees God doesn't want me, so maybe I got to take a different route in life. And the pasuk describes that Hushai the Arki came with his garment torn and earth on his head, and Hushai came to David. David tells him, if you come with me, you'll be a burden. But if you go back to the city and you try to convince Avshalom that you've switched sides, that you're on his side, so then you can help me and undo the advice of Achitophel. And whatever news you have, send with Tzadok and Evyasar's children. Tzadok and Evyasar, they'll send me word. And Hushai, described as David's good friend, comes back to the city as Avshalom enters the city. So David is out in the desert. Avshalom has entered and captured the capital without a fight. Avshalom is in the city. Hushai is there, and David gives Hushai very interesting instructions. This was pointed out to me by the Rosh Kollel, Rav Avram Ort. What does David tell Hushai? He says, whatever you hear Achitophel say, you say the opposite. Doesn't matter whether you think it's right or wrong. Achitophel said X, you got to say not X. That's what I need you to do. You're going to be there, and I'm going to try. You're going to try to become Avshalom's trusted advisor. Whatever you hear Achitophel say, your job is to say the opposite advice. I don't need you to gauge anything. He doesn't ask him for any intelligence. He just says, "Well, use your wisdom to give the opposite advice of Achitophel." Why is this the correct advice? Because David knows that Achitophel is the smartest man ever. The Navi is about to describe Achitophel as being so smart, it would be as though you asked God the question. And so David knows that whatever Achitophel says, you just got to give the other advice, and he's better off than had Achitophel's advice been taken. And we're going to see that that was exactly on target. So Hushai goes back.
He also tells Hushai to acknowledge Absalom as king.
Well, he's telling him, get him to like you and trust you. Yes, yes. Okay, 16th chapter. The Navi continues and says that as David was, he had left the mountaintop of Har HaZesim, and he is approached by Tziva. And this, again, we see how Hashem puts people in tight spots, and at that moment, Hashem tests them. It is at the moments when a person's nerves are frayed, when everything seems to be going against him, that Hashem gauges a person. And we've often discussed that it seems that the idea behind it is that what comes out at those moments is a reflection of all of our lifetime. We like to think, I'm the type of person that does A, B, C, and D. You see, when everything's going well, that's what I do. And it seems from the Navi that what comes out when things are tough, that's a real reflection of what type of person we've built, what type of person we've made ourselves into. Meaning life is a series of challenges. Life is like a graph. You have those spikes where suddenly there's a tremendous amount of pressure. It could be a day, a week, a month, a year. But most of life goes on a pretty up and down, up and down, up and down. And then you have those moments of intense pressure. And in those moments, what comes out is what you've prepared, what type of person you've made of yourself. So David is at a pivotal moment, and he's going to be faced with a little bit of halachic ruling to do. He's leaving. Most of Israel has turned against him. And there's this man named Mephibosheth who is crippled, who was a descendant of King Saul's. And out of reverence for Jonathan, King Saul's son, and because of the pact they had between them, David had adopted Mephibosheth and returned to him the family's wealth and taken good care of him. And now, as David is facing this great challenge, Mephibosheth's top servant, Tziva, comes with a pair of donkeys, 200 loaves of bread, 100 dried figs. He's bringing 100 clusters of dried grapes. He's bringing them everything they need, a flask of wine. And David asks Tziva, what's all that? And Tziva says, I brought you donkeys for you and your people to ride. I brought you bread and dried fruits for your lads. I brought you wine because I know you'll be tired as you traverse the desert. And David says, and where is the son of your master? You used to be a servant of Shaul, of Yonatan. Where is your master's son? And Tziva says, he's sitting in Jerusalem, because he figures when the dust settles after the civil war between you and your son, the people of Israel will get tired of both of you and take him as king. Tziva's lying. What really happened was, Mephibosheth told Tziva, prepare all the food, we have to go help David. This is his hour of need, let's go help him. And what Tziva did was he prepared all the food, and being that his master Mephibosheth was a cripple, so he took advantage of that, and he himself took all the food and went out to David and made up this whole story. He fabricated the story, telling David, you should know Mephibosheth is interested in your form. And so when David hears that, he makes a critical error. David says, I hereby grant you everything Mephibosheth owns. David's in a tight spot, we can't judge him, but Chazal judge him. Chazal say, David erred. He accepted Lashon Hara. Yes, everyone's turned against him, but how does he know that Mephibosheth turned against him? The facts were Mephibosheth did not turn against him. And Tziva, of course, says, I bow before you, my master. I should find favor before my master, the king. David is leaving Jerusalem. He comes to the place near the city of Bahurim. And the head of the Jewish court, Shimi ben Gera, also a relative of King Saul's, comes out and starts cursing David. Shimi ben Gera was a chief rabbi. Shimi ben Gera was the head of the courts, one of the biggest Talmidei Chachamim of the day. Shimi ben Gera is throwing stones at David and cursing. And David is standing there with all the great warriors to his right and left. And this man is throwing stones, hurling stones, and cursing at them. And Shimi yells at him and says, leave, leave, you man of blood, you man who has no yoke of heaven. God has finally repaid you for all the blood of the house of Shaul, that you took the throne instead of him. And Hashem gave the throne to your son Avshalom. Here you're being paid back for your evil ways. You're a man of blood. David's nephew, Abishai, says to the king, he says, why should that dead dog curse my master, the king? Let me go over there and remove his head. And the king says, fantastic line, he says, Mali v'lachem b'nei tzuruya. Mali v'lachem. What have I to do with you, sons of Tzuruya, my sister? Mali v'lachem. What hatred have I done anything to you, and what have you ever done to me? Why is there any enmity between us? I'm not interested in having him killed. Why would you do something that's against my will? So he's cursing, let him curse. Must be God told him to curse me. He's a big rabbi. He wouldn't be cursing me if I didn't deserve it. He's the head of the Sanhedrin. He's the biggest sage in Israel. If he's cursing me, how could he curse the king of Israel? Must be God told him to curse me. How could you go and behead him? Let's be quiet and hear his curses. So at the same time that we see David's slight shortcoming in accepting Lashon Hara from Tziva, we see David's greatness, that he's being cursed, and his nephew offers him to go and execute the one who's cursing him. And he says, hold it. If he's cursing me, well then God must want me cursed. David tells his servants, he says, you know, my own son who came from me wants to kill me. So the one of Benjamin wants to curse? Let him curse. God must have told him to curse me. Maybe God will see my tears and give me back some good in exchange for the curses I received today. And David travels, and Shimi continues following him on the mountaintop. He's on the side of the mountain cursing and throwing stones at him. to the point where David is covered with dust. And they're on the run. They pause. And Avshalom and the majority of the people of Israel have made their ascent into Jerusalem, and Achitophel is with him. Hushai comes to Avshalom, and he approaches Avshalom with exultations. He says, "Long live the king! Long live the king!" And Avshalom says, "This is the kindness you do for your friend. Why didn't you go with your friend?" He doesn't want to call him the king. He doesn't want to call him my father. He calls him your friend. And Hushai says to Avshalom, "No, God and the nation, all of Israel has voted you into office. Shouldn't I be with you? And secondly, I'm not really turning my back on him. I'm being faithful to his own son, just as I served your father. I'll be before you." So Avshalom welcomes the second advisor, Hushai. And that is going to be the critical error that Avshalom does, because Hushai has no interest in helping Avshalom. So Avshalom tells Achitophel, who was his chief advisor all along, he says, "Work it out with him, what we should do, what's next." And Achitophel says to Avshalom, "Take your father's pilagshim," what they translate as concubines, "and take them forcibly for yourself. And when the people of Israel hear that you've done such an act, then you'll have strength." What was Achitophel thinking? So the commentaries here are divided. Some say that Achitophel's claim was really for Avshalom's benefit. He said, "People can't be confident in supporting you when you're fighting your own father. People are going to always wonder, maybe he'll make up with his father, so their support of you is going to be half-hearted. You have to show them that there's no making up with your father. If you take his wives forcibly, well, if everyone sees you do that, they'll know you could never make up with your father, because your father has to kill you if you make up with him. So you that's an action that's closing it. That's closing the deal, and then the people will know that you're not turning back, and they won't turn back." Others say that Achitophel's real plan was Avshalom will kill David, and then Achitophel will kill Avshalom for having raped his own father's wife. Achitophel was giving him a plan which was really to ensure that if Avshalom wins, which he was confident he would, then Achitophel will take the throne from him and have him executed for what he just did. Avshalom sets up a tent on the roof, and he takes his father's pilagshim, and everyone witnesses this hideous act. And this is a fulfillment of the curse that Hashem said to David, "You took someone's wife in hiding," with all kinds of halachic reasons why it's permissible. You did it in hiding, I'm going to do it publicly. Everyone's going to see what I'm going to do to you. And here the Navi says, Achitophel's advice in those days was as good as asking God. Meaning Achitophel was so smart. The simple understanding is this was good advice Achitophel gave. And Achitophel tells Avshalom, "Let me take 12,000 men and chase after David now at night. Because now he's tired, and now he doesn't have strength, and we'll chase everyone away. And the fact that we attack right away will scare his men, and they'll run. And he won't have anyone that's strong enough to stand by him, and then it'll be easy prey. I'll kill him. And then I'll bring everyone back. You'll see everyone will be united under your command." And Avshalom and all the elders say that's a good idea. And Avshalom says, "But wait, let's hear what Hushai says." And Hushai comes to Avshalom. Now David is waiting to get word from them. David is really weak. If they'd attack that night, David can't stand up to it. David is waiting to hear from them what he should do. And Hushai tells Avshalom, Avshalom tells him, "This is what Achitophel advised. What do you say?" And Hushai says, "This time Achitophel didn't give good advice. Every other time, you know, he gives good advice. But this time, no." Hushai has to undo Avshalom's, Achitophel's advice. And Hushai says, "You know your father and his men? You know them. They're brave warriors. You know how embittered they are? When you take a bear's child away from him, that's when the bear is most vicious. Well, right now they're most embittered and embrazened against you. Your father's a man of war. You think he'll let the people just go to sleep tonight? Right now, you know what's really happening? Your father's setting up ambushes. And what will happen is, if your first advance fails, so then what will people hear? They'll hear that, Avshalom's losing, David's winning again. David knows what he's doing. And even if you potentially could win the war now, if you go to try now, chances are he'll catch you in an ambush. You'll lose the first battle, and that'll ruin your reputation. Your father, you know, he's a brave warrior. He's got the heart of a lion. And everyone knows that he's a brave warrior, as are the men that are with him. My advice is, first gather in the whole army, gather in all of Israel from the north to the south. And then, when you'll have all of the people of Israel at your side, then he'll have nowhere to run. Then you'll be able to take him down wherever he goes. So he makes a good pitch. If he tries to go into a fortified city, all of us will gather around that city and we'll take it down. He'll have nowhere to go. We'll take down this city, we'll take him down to the point where there won't be a rock left in the city. You'll have the masses at your side. Hushai makes such a good case that Avshalom and the people of Israel say that's better advice than Achitophel. And the Navi says it was unnatural that they should accept Hushai's advice, because it was not good advice. The Navi says this was God's doing to ensure that Achitophel's good advice would not be heeded, because God wanted to punish Avshalom. And this is one of the points where we have to pause and realize that this is what we're learning Navi for. This isn't a storybook. This isn't a history book. This is a book about being God-fearing people. And the Navi presents to us the stories of our history so that we learn from them. We're supposed to see God's hand in history. History is supposed to be a book of Musar, a book that teaches us how we're supposed to behave today. If we learn the Navi correctly, then when we open a newspaper, when we hear about things that are happening, we say, okay, where's God's hand in that? If Libya's falling and Gaddafi is still up there and we don't know what's going to be, there's something about us in that story. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening. And the same thing with the Mubarak. Maybe it was because they wanted to give up the south. Maybe it was because they wanted to give complete control to the Palestinians over the Egyptian border. I don't know what God's thinking. I don't know. Prophets were told. I don't know. But what I do know is that the great message we see repeatedly in the Tanakh is that the unfolding of history is not just about natural events. It's not about economics. It's not about uprisings. It's about individuals making decisions and Hashem paying them back for those decisions. So Avshalom is successful in his rebellion initially, and that we are told is because of what David did earlier in his life. This was a punishment that was foretold by the prophet. And now Avshalom is failing. Avshalom is about to bring about his own demise, when he had good counsel, and logic dictated he should have gone with that counsel. And the Navi tells us God wanted it so. And that is the key to looking at our world today, and the key to looking at our history, to realize there's God's hand in all of it. The Pasuk says, "V'anochi hasteir hastir panai mehim," I will hide my face, and that's why some say it's called Histoya. Histoya, the hidden hand of God. That's the way we're supposed to look at history. So the Navi here gives us spells it out for us. When we see history, we don't know. So Chazal sometimes tell us. They tell us, why did Sancheirav merit to what he did? Why did Eglon merit what he did? Why did Nebuchadnezzar merit what he did? At different pivotal points in history, Chazal revealed to us why things happened. Why did the Roman Empire merit to rise? Why did the Greek Empire merit to rise? Each time Chazal gives us insight. We don't have Chazal today. We have a hard time defining what we see. But we have to look at it with a certain attitude. When we look at it, we have to realize, wait, God is telling us something. All too often we look at the stick. We say, it's like the dog barks at the stick that hit him. The stick is being held by someone. All of history, all of the news that we see is a stick being held. God makes things happen in a certain way, and we're supposed to learn from it. If there's a threat right now that the whole Middle East is about to go extreme, we have to realize that that's positioned at us, not just because practically it's facing us and we're the first threat. And just like they're selling t-shirts that say freedom in Egypt and in Libya, they're also selling t-shirts that say we hate Jews and kill the Jews. It's not just because practically there's a real danger around here, it's also because there's a message here. If that's the way God is moving history, then God is telling us something. Something about how we're supposed to become better people. The story of Megillas Esther is about how the Jews got the message. Well, it took an annihilation decree for them to get the hint, but finally they got it. The temple's destroyed and they didn't get the hint. They didn't do tshuva. They're sold into slavery and they didn't do tshuva. And finally God says, okay, so there'll be a decree to annihilate the Jewish people, and then they do tshuva, the biggest tshuva they did since the giving of the Torah. From the time the Torah was given, we hadn't had such an elevation till the point of Megillas Esther. The celebration of Purim is almost like Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the culmination of the giving of the Torah at Sinai, Shavuos, and the sin of the golden calf, and finally forgiveness, Yom Kippur. We can start afresh and move forward. Purim was a greater day, because Purim we aroused ourselves to tshuva. We aroused ourselves to great heights. So the Navi tells us it was Hashem's doing. And Chushai comes to the Kohanim Tzadok and Evyosar, and he sends word. He says, this is the advice we gave, and quickly send word to David. He may not sleep at night. He has to run, because if he sticks around, he could be wiped out tonight. And they send their children, Yonatan and Achimatz, they send them to give word to David. But a lad sees the children going. And Avshalom is told that these two children were sent, and they sent soldiers after them. And so the two are running, and the soldiers are after them, and we'll pick up here next week.